Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I am John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Wednesday, June 29, 2016. South Sudanese church leaders continue to express disappointment over the government's response to the killings in Wau.
Trust has been broken again and again. When will peace reign? When will our people be free again to love and trust? For how long must we weep?
And South Sudan's president admits for the first time that his country is facing an economic crisis.
We are now in serious crisis, economical crisis, which we are in. We must remain optimistic that I know this situation will change. I'm very optimistic that one day we will come out of all these crises.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. But we first go to Wau, where humanitarian agencies say they are deeply concerned about the last weekend's deadly violence, which left dozens of unarmed civilians dead and injured, and thousands others displaced. Military leaders have imposed a curfew on Wau town and are calling on displaced to return to their homes. But many residents say they do not trust the army and are too afraid to go home. Many say their homes were either looted or destroyed. South Sudan in Focus reporter Dimo Silva Aurelio was in Wau when the violence broke out on Friday and describes what happened.
The population in these communities, I mean in the southern part to the eastern part of Wau town, were being, rumored that, okay, please get out of the town and we are coming to attack. So many of the civilians who are staying in these residential areas, that was Friday night, so most of them moved out of the town, and the attack was expected to occur on Saturday morning. So as Saturday morning came, there was nothing until 8, when the first bullet was shot towards the southern part of Wau town, where there were soldiers deployed, and the tanks, SPLA tanks, were deployed to protect that part of Wau town. So when the bullet started, the shooting started, we never knew what was the shooting about. It was an attack or it was just a one-side shooting. But then that shooting did not stop. It continued for some times. Then after 2 hours, shooting just started sporadically all over the town. So even some parts which were not affected, already gunfire, you could hear gunfire throughout the town. So this one lasted for at least from 8, it went up to 4 p.m.
Who was shooting who at this point?
At this point, according to sources from the military and the police people, they are saying there were a group of SPLA-IO who entered the town, and the soldiers or the SPLA soldiers, including the police forces, were trying to repulse this group from the town. But then this fighting was happening in the residential areas, where some civilians who never left the town or who never fled the town into the Unumis or into the church were still in their houses. So this fighting seems to be between the SPLA-IO group who attacked the town and the SPLA who are trying to protect the town.
This was now Saturday. Tell us what happened on Sunday.
So on Sunday, that's when a big number of people, when I walked out of the university to see what's happening around, I found a big number of people already staged in the church. And some of them I heard they went to the Unimis. I never reached the Unimis compound. But in the church, I went up to the church and stayed there for Sunday evening until Monday. I was in the church. I even slept there where these people were, the displaced people were sheltering in the church.
From what you've heard, from the UN and other agencies and other eyewitnesses, how many people were killed or injured?
Regarding the casualties who became victim of this fight, I saw at least 11 who were being buried in the Catholic Church, and among them is a child of at least 1 month. That was on Sunday. So the child of 1 month, which was, I think, shot while the mother was hurrying to the church. As the day goes, the number kept increasing. And I believe up to now, still the number kept increasing. Until yesterday, it said there were bodies being brought into the Catholic Church for burial. So the number might keep on increasing because some of these people were killed inside their room, their houses, and they could not be easily identified and be taken for burial. And some of them probably might rot inside the house because they could not get, a chance to be buried in a decent manner. And in the next, in the Catholic Church also, there was a church extreme end where the fire first started. There were already enough, people being put there. The priest was telling me there were seven already who were being buried there at that Catholic Church also. And then in the mortuary also, the hospital authorities were reporting that at least 20 people were there in the mortuary while teaching hospital. And then there were other bodies still which have not been discovered. But the UN were estimating that the number might have gone to more than 200 people who might have been killed in this situation, in this fight. But yet there is no clear figure of the exact casualties because at the particular moment, since civilians have not yet returned, those who fled their homes, there could be relatives who were killed inside the house, and people could not exactly determine how many people have been killed in this situation, not until maybe they return all. And I believe it will be difficult to discover some of these because they would have rotten inside their houses. And even to give a decent burial could be difficult because if the corpse already reached that stage, you cannot bury anymore.
That's Dimo Silva Aurelio, South Sudan in Focus reporter, who just arrived safely in the capital from Wau. He was speaking to Charlton Doki in Juba. Church leaders are condemning the recent violence in Wau, which left dozens, if not hundreds, of people dead and hundreds of others injured. Church leaders say people are still living in fear, unable to return to their homes. They say the fighting must end so aid agencies can move to help the wounded. Mungoma Davis Rakarinj has this story for VOA from Juba.
Church leaders from the Sudan and South Sudan Council of Churches expressed their concerns about the recent deadly violence in Wau at a news conference held in Juba today. The church leaders say the traditional government of national unity must end violence now. The acting general secretary of the Sudan and South Sudan Council of Churches, Reverend Emmanuel Natania, read a statement on behalf of his Christian denominations in South Sudan.
Trust has been broken again and again. When will peace reign? When will our people be free again to love and trust? For how long must we weep? For how long must we mourn? How much more must our people suffer?
Natania says church leaders are deeply disturbed by what they termed as, in two quotes, intolerable fighting in the country.
Security must be provided for all citizens above all. We demand that human rights be upheld and all citizens be protected until they can safely return home with humanitarian support given to those affected by the fighting. We call for an immediate recommitment of the parties to the agreement on the resolution of the conflict in the Republic of South Sudan.
Thousands of residents of Wau Town are seeking refuge at the United Nations base in Wau, while others are sheltering at various church and NGO compounds, including one run by the International Committee of the Red Cross. Reverend Moses Dengbol, the Bishop of the Episcopal Church of Sudan and South Sudan, Diocese of Wau, says thousands of people are now living in the bush, afraid to come home.
They need shelter, because people are there sitting under trees with children, and of course, you know, this is a rainy season, so if the rain comes, that will be another problem. And of course, food. Those are the things that they told us they need at the moment. And of course, people are afraid. That is the biggest part of it now. They are afraid even to come out, and you find it's only the security forces who are walking around Wau Town. I was even asking them, what about there is a river nearby? Can people get water there and come and boil it? But the pastor told me they are afraid to come out of the compound to go and get water for themselves.
Reverend Peter Gailwal, the chairperson of the Council of Churches, says enough is enough.
People are finishing now. They are dying. And tomorrow we talk about there will be intikhabat, in election in 2018. Who will vote? People have finished. That is our concern. Let the people leave.
Church leaders say the fighting hampers full implementation of the peace agreement. The bishops and pastors say they have formed a committee that will meet both President Kiir and First Vice President Riek Machar to voice their complaints over the slow pace of the implementation of the August peace deal. For VOA News, I am Mugume, Davis Ruakarinj in Juba.
President Salva Kiir today reiterated his commitment to implementing the peace agreement signed with First Vice President Riek Machar to restore peace in South Sudan and build the country's shattered economy. President Kiir spoke in the capital, Juba, while opening a four-day SPLM Youth League conference. Waki Simon Wudu has the details for VOA from Juba.
Comrade Salva Kiir, oye! Comrade James Wani, oye!
Hundreds of SPLM youth from different SPLM offices chant slogans of the SPLM party at the start of the SPLM Youth League conference in Juba. President Kiir, who presided over the opening ceremony, denounced any move to attain power through violent means and challenged the youth to promote democratic processes, including democratic elections. Mr. Kiir also vowed to rehabilitate the country's deteriorating economy.
We are now in serious crisis, economical crisis, which we are in. We must remain optimistic that I know this situation will change. I'm very optimistic that one day we will come out of all these crises.
The president did not outline any measures to climb out of the economic crisis. Once again, Mr. Kiir reiterated his commitment to implement the peace deal and called for the support of the nation's youth to restore peace and stability. He says there are legitimate reasons why implementing the agreement is taking so long.
It was designed in a way that it could not be easily implemented. And this is why we are moving with it cautiously and very slowly. And there are people who are really trying their best to let it break. But with your support, it comes the youth, we will not let it be broken in our hands.
Mr. Kiir vowed to improve policies of the ruling SPLM party by incorporating training programs that contain skills in various sectors that will be used to empower the youth. Akol Paul Kordit, chairperson of the SPLM Youth League, says the conference is aimed at restructuring the SPLM Youth League.
It's therefore meant to rejuvenate the work of the whole SPLM, and in particular that of the Youth League. After this conference, we expect the Youth League to go back to all the states and start re-establishing themselves to make sure that we have an effective, strong Youth League in all the states. Remembering that we used to have 10 states, now we have 28 states.
Some 150 delegates from all 28 states, including the disputed Abia region, are attending the youth conference. For VOA News, I am Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, South Sudan government say they have no money to celebrate this year's Independence Day. We'll have more on that when we return.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
is it okay to tell a small white lie to get out of trouble?
No, no, no. Because whether it's a white lie, a big lie, a small lie, it's the same thing, it's a lie. By the time it comes up worse than the way it would have been in the actual sense. So you better tell the truth in the first place and you get over it.
Yes, it's okay. It's okay because the world we live in, sometimes you really need to do some small. Thank God you even said small. You do some small lies to get out of trouble.
Yeah, in my opinion, sometimes to tell a white lie is okay because some people cannot understand person easily. Unless you have to tell just something to take you out of them, then later on you will come and clarify it to them.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. The South Sudan government has cancelled this year's Independence Day celebrations, saying it has no money to organize a major event. A South Sudanese economist says he welcomes the decision, saying Juba should focus on restoring the shattered economy. Tito Justin has more for VOA from Juba.
Over the past 4 years, the government would spend an average 10 million South Sudanese pounds to organize July 9th Independence Day celebrations. But this year, the government has not paid the salaries of thousands of civil workers for several months, saying it doesn't have the money. James Alich Garang, a senior economist at the Ebony Center for Strategic Studies, says if the government is not doing more to restore the country's economy, South Sudan's national budget deficit will be in the tens of billions of pounds by 2017. Alich says the country should adopt recommendations from the International Monetary Fund to try to restore its collapsing economy. He says the economic crisis will undoubtedly worsen if no tangible solution is reached soon.
In the next fiscal year 2016-2017, the fiscal deficit for South Sudan is going to be about 34 billion SSP. It's a lot of money. This is just deficit. Using the exchange rate of 30 SSP per $1. Today we are talking about what? It's about 50.
The government also directed the Cabinet Affairs Ministry to evict former ministers who are not part of the unity government from hotels. Makwe says the cabinet realized it was spending too much on unnecessary items.
This amount is not possible. The cabinet decided that all this should be suspended. It is premature for us to talk about these issues at this moment, because whatever little resources that we have must be used for addressing our current economic situation.
Alich says cutting down on such expenditures is fine, but it's not nearly enough to restore the country's economy. He says, for one thing, the Ministry of Finance should stop paying government employees in dollars, which puts a huge amount of pressure on the banks because of the high foreign exchange rate. Alich also recommends that any foreign currency that comes into the country be controlled by the central bank.
Others include limiting foreign travels, people going abroad, especially the government delegation. Suppose you have 10 people going to Nairobi, and sometimes it becomes 40 people, or even 50, and you have to pay the whole fiat yam. On the fiscal side, is that you must always reduce also expenditure in hard currency.
Reactions were mixed among Juba residents on the decision to suspend the 5th Independence Anniversary celebrations.
And we teachers especially, we want to be looked to very seriously, because soon we'll also close the schools. A teacher can't fall down with anger. What is remaining in the granary? Let them bring and rescue the teachers so that we continue pushing this nation forward. I think because of the crisis and the celebration to be adjourned, that is also a wise decision.
Everybody knows in South Sudan that we are in a critical condition, economic crisis in our country. It's not something new. So it's also good. If we stay at home, taking rest is also a celebration. We will celebrate it if things are improved.
I don't think that the independence should be take off, so let us continue with our independence.
As we know very well, our country still never developed. We cannot able to do complaints of that, but just we pray God that one time he will provide us with a lot of money, and next year we'll be able to have that wonderful celebration.
Last year, the government spent over 30 million pounds to mark the 4th Independence Anniversary. For VOA News, I am Tito Justin in Juba.
The South Sudan government says more than 4.3 million people are food insecure. Agriculture and Food Security Minister Lam Akola Jawing says food insecurity will deteriorate even further in July. Akol says he's calling on the international humanitarian agencies to feed tens of thousands of South Sudanese citizens and provide other relief. Nabil Biajo has more for VOA from Juba.
The Minister of Agriculture and Food Security released the first quarter of the 2016 Integrated Food Security Phase Classification, or IPC, report today. Lama Kola Jawin says more than 4 million people are severely food insecure in South Sudan.
The overall food and nutrition security situation has deteriorated in many parts of the country, with an estimated 4.3 million people in phase 3, 4, and 5 since April 2016.
Phase 3, 4, and 5 are labeled as crisis, emergency, and catastrophe according to the IPC report. The report says the current deterioration in food security and nutrition is primarily due to physical insecurity, the effects of the economic crisis, and the depleted stocks from the last harvest. Akol says food insecurity in South Sudan will only get worse in the coming months.
The situation is expected to deteriorate further during the May to July of this year, lean season, which is actually beginning, with an estimated 4.8 million people being severely food insecure.
Akol says the most affected are the displaced people around the country, especially in Greater Upper Nile. He says even the urban towns of Juba, Wau, and Awil have at least 300,000 people who are food insecure. Akol says the slow progress in implementing the peace deal is affecting citizens across the country.
As peace agreement is implemented and the transitional government of national unity starts functioning in earnest, it is expected that the physical security situation will gradually improve within the projected period. We are talking of between May and July. This will have some positive impact on markets, livelihoods, and humanitarian space.
The UN resident and humanitarian coordinator in South Sudan is calling on all stakeholders to go back to the drawing board and figure out what went terribly wrong. Eugene Owusu says South Sudan has potential agricultural resources.
So I really would like to use this opportunity to call upon government and all the partners to really scale up in terms of the investments that we need to make in agriculture so that subsequently and hopefully in future we will have more favorable numbers.
Sergei Tissot, the Food and Agriculture Organization representative in South Sudan, says although humanitarian aid will help save lives now, South Sudan must come up with a long-term plan to increase its local agricultural production to reduce food insecurity.
There is a chronic gap of food production in South Sudan, and we cannot address all the issues by humanitarian support. We need also a development investment in agriculture in South Sudan to cover the gap in food security.
Government and humanitarian agencies both say peace and stability must be restored in South Sudan so that citizens can produce their own food. International partners that have provided millions of dollars to South Sudan in the past say talk is cheap and the government must start doing what it said it would do months ago: fix the economy and stop the fighting. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio in Juba.
The rebel Sudan People's Liberation Movement North is accusing the Sudanese government of blocking the transfer of 22 prisoners of war and 22 mine workers from the rebel-controlled areas of Nuba Mountains and Blue Nile States to Khartoum. The International Committee of the Red Cross chartered a plane to transport the prisoners of war this weekend, but Sudanese authorities in Khartoum did not give the ICRC landing permit.
The leadership of the SPLM, they decided that to release those 22 as good news in order that these steps can constitute a good in terms of exchanging the prisoners. In addition to these 20 prisoners of war, we are releasing 22 civilians who are caught behind our lines, mining workers in German Chrome in Brunei. And the government came again and they sabotaged the process. The process was failed and we are back from Asosa.
SPLM North spokesman Mubarak Adol says it's unfortunate that the government has no compassion for the families of the prisoners of war.
Since 5 years of the attack, they didn't announce any prisoners of war from our side and our soldiers. They are killing them so that they don't want to welcome their prisoners of war. It is shame for them. Issue, I would like to assure our commitment as SPLM North that we are still committed to release this 20. This number will not be changed. And those prisoners of war, whenever the ICRC is ready.
Meanwhile, the spokesperson of the International Committee of the Red Cross says the ICRC is ready to transport the prisoners of war and other detainees held by SPLM North in the two areas to Khartoum. Elodie Snydland says the ICRC will wait for Sudanese authorities to grant permission for ICRC's plane to transport the prisoners of war to Khartoum.
What I can say is that, unfortunately, the operation had to be postponed. It was scheduled for the 23 and 24th of June, but unfortunately, the final authorization to take off on the said date was not granted. That's why the ICRC had to postpone the operation to a later date.
The government of Sudan has fought a protracted war with the SPLA North rebels in the Nuba Mountains and the Blue Nile State, displacing hundreds of thousands of people since 2011. This report was prepared by VOA fellow Nadia Taha. You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here is a recap of today's top stories with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Dam.
Thanks, John. South Sudan in Focus reporter Dimo Silva, who was in Wau Town when deadly fighting erupted in the town this past weekend, says he saw more than a dozen bodies of unarmed civilians killed during the fighting, which he says appeared to be between SPLA-IO forces and SPLA forces who were trying to defend the town. He says even more bodies were reported by local church leaders and hospital officials. Thousands of people sought shelter in church compounds and NGO compounds in the town. The United Nations says the death toll could be as high as 200. Military leaders have imposed a curfew on Wau Town and are calling on the thousands of displaced to return home. But many people say they don't believe it is safe to leave their hiding places in the bush. Many also say their homes were looted or destroyed. Church leaders have condemned the violence and are calling on government leaders to end the fighting so at least aid agencies can reach the wounded and provide emergency relief. Reverend Emmanuel Netanya, head of the South Sudan and Sudan Council of Churches, says the trust of the people has been broken again and again. He asked, "When will peace reign?" during a news conference in Juba today. Netanya says church leaders are demanding that citizens' human rights be upheld. Thousands of residents remain in hiding. And finally, President Salva Kiir today reiterated his commitment to implementing the agreement he signed almost a year ago with First Vice President Riek Machar to restore peace in South Sudan and rebuild the country's shattered economy. President Kiir, who opened a four-day SPLM Youth League conference in Juba today, denounced any move to attain power through violent means and challenge the youth to promote democratic practices, including democratic elections. Mr. Kiir also vowed to rehabilitate the country's deteriorating economy, admitting for the first time publicly that the country is facing an economic crisis. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Dam.
That's our show for this Wednesday. We now leave you with the song Salam Ya Sudan by Victoria Ole. We have been listening to Victoria Ole with the song Salam Ya Sudan. I am John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. We are glad you could be here. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.